O'Grady, and welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this Wednesday, August 5th, we talk to the man at the center of a major debate in the Democratic Party. Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed is running for Senate in Michigan as a progressive. He thinks he can win. We're going to ask him why. Plus, we've got a vital conversation you won't want to miss. It's on the mental health of new moms. 1 in 8 experience postpartum depression, and yet there is still a stigma. Norrell O'Donnell is here along with two experts to talk about warning signs and how to get help if you need it. And actor Aaron Pierre is with us right here in the studio. He's going to talk about joining the DC Universe as Green Lantern in the new superhero series, Lanterns. All that and more right now.
All right, we're going to begin with the man at the center of a huge debate among Democrats. CBS News projects Abdul Al-Sayed narrowly defeated Congresswoman Haley Stevens, a centrist candidate in the Michigan Senate Democratic primary. Al-Sayed is a progressive, and his win would be a very big deal for the party's left. We spoke earlier to Al-Sayed before CBS News projected his victory. Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed joins us now from Detroit. Good morning, sir. Good to see you.
Good morning, Vlad.
So, as you know, this race is much closer than polling suggested. Have you at all heard from Congresswoman Stevens?
We haven't had a chance to talk. It's been about 6 hours since NBC called it last night. We've got to bring the party together, and I know both she and I are committed to doing that. We've only got 13 weeks to beat a guy who has no business being in the U.S. Senate. And so I'm looking forward to that conversation, grateful for the hard-fought race that we had, and the things that united us and the things that unify us are so much bigger than any of the things that divided us.
So let's talk about that unity. What do you think you need to do to sway Haley Stevens supporters over to your side?
Well, Vlad, I'll tell you this. We set out 13 months ago, 15 months ago now, to build a movement, to get money out of politics, put money in your pocket, pass Medicare for all. Mike Rogers is a guy who wants to put more money in politics. He is dead set on taking money out of your pockets by colluding with some of the worst folks and the worst corporations who've taken money out. And if he had his way, he would have Medicare for none. So I think the things that bring us together are so much bigger. And the focus that we need to have to take on Mike Rogers and the Trumpism that he's chosen to represent are the things that are going to bring us together. There's a lot of healing to do after a hard-fought primary like this. But I have said that this is a big, open movement. We welcome anybody and everybody who understands that we need a government of the people, by the people, and for the people to it. And I'm looking forward to welcoming our new friends to this coalition to beat Mike Rogers in the fall.
All right, Doctor, let's talk about Haley Stevens and the fact that she was obviously pro-Israel. You've been very clear about pulling back the spending for countries like the state of Israel. But what would you say to some of her supporters who see Israel as a key ally of the United States and that they deserve our financial support? I know that you've gone on the record to say that you think that that money that we spend should be spent and invested here in the United States. But many people see that as a false choice. The federal budget is nearly $7 trillion. Many voters would say that the United States can invest at home while also supporting allies whose security interests advance America's own. How do you address that?
Well, Vlad, I'll tell you this. I'm coming to you from Detroit. I can go 5 minutes in almost any direction. I can show you a school that looks like it did 50 years ago. And when you talk about improving that school, everybody asks, well, how are you going to pay for that? I just don't know why we don't ask the same question when it comes to unconditional foreign military aid for any country. That's Israel, sure, but that's also Egypt, where my family immigrated from. That's also Pakistan and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. All countries that we send unconditional foreign military aid. And I don't know about you or the viewers, but I don't pay my taxes thinking, man, I can't wait for another country to get a bomb or a tank.
But what kind of message does that send, Doctor?
If they improve that school.
What kind of message does that send to our allies and our adversaries that the United States would not be willing to support a key ally in global strategy?
Well, I think it would send that we're about principle. If you're going to use the money that we send you to do apartheid and genocide, then you should think twice about getting our funding. And also think about the message that that sends to families who are in need in our own communities. It says that we see you. You have been contributing to our tax base for a very long time, and you haven't been getting the deal that you deserve. It says that we really are about trying to make your life more affordable, trying to make sure that you have the resources you need. And it says that we believe you have the right to your tax dollars. And so I think too often we're too worried about what something says to someone else. We're not as worried about what we say to people who are struggling for the ability to afford the basic things that they need for a dignified life. We are in an affordability crisis right now. It is high past time for us to prioritize spending on the things that make people whole, guaranteeing their health care, making sure that they have housing and good schools, making sure they can breathe clean air and drink clean water, standing up to the corporations and special interests who have corrupted our politics for far too long.
Dr. El-Sayed, Nichelle Turner here. You spoke just a minute ago about wanting to have a big coalition, but members of the Democratic establishment seemingly pulled together to try and defeat you. Chuck Schumer, Gretchen Whitmer, Jim Clyburn, all of those folks. What is your message to them today after seeing the race that you have run?
Look, we have an opportunity right now to remember what it is that we're up against. We're up against a historically corrupted president, a guy who made $2.2 billion on his office in just the first year alone. We're up against a movement to squash democracy itself. And whatever we may differ on, it is so much smaller than what we agree on. So I'm looking forward to locking arms to defeat Mike Rogers and to beat Trumpism, to hold him accountable for the next several years, and to elect a president who believes in the value of democracy and wants to take on the responsibility of providing people health care and standing up for things like good schools and opportunity in our country. So I hope that today we can come together.
So, Doctor, do you think that it's time for Chuck Schumer to step aside? Do you think that Chuck Schumer has the pulse of the Democratic Party?
Well, look, I've said very clearly that I think Senator Chris Van Hollen would be an amazing Senate Majority Leader. But right now, we have a job to do, and that's to beat Mike Rogers in the fall. That's what I'm focused on. I'm hoping that anybody and everybody who's committed to doing that comes together. I know Senator Schumer and I are united in that goal, and I'm looking forward to working together to get that done.
All right, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, thank you very much for spending some time with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up, Nora O'Donnell joins us with a conversation you are going to want to hear. Nora.
That's right, Callie. We are talking about a public health crisis that no one is talking about, postpartum mental health, something that does not get enough attention. So we're going to talk to two doctors about this very important issue. The trial of Lindsay Clancy is sparking a national conversation about postpartum mental health. Clancy is accused of killing her three young children in her Massachusetts home. Prosecutors say she did so deliberately. But her defense argues she was suffering from postpartum psychosis. It's a rare but serious condition affecting less than 1% of women after childbirth. Experts say many women still face barriers to care that may complicate treatment. This morning, we're joined by Dr. Camila Phillips, a board-certified OBGYN and the founder of Kala Women's Health, and Dr. Catherine Berndorf, a psychiatrist and co-founder of the Motherhood Center. Good morning to both of you doctors. Let me start with you, Dr. Berndorf. Is this a public health crisis?
Without question. Mental health, maternal mental health, is the leading cause of maternal morbidity and mortality, so death. The leading cause of death during pregnancy, birth, first 6 weeks, and the first year postpartum.
I think people will be stunned to hear that. And Dr. Phillips, we were talking about this. For many people, they acknowledge right after birth and giving birth, it's a tough time. Mm-hmm. It's having three children myself. But what is the difference between depression and psychosis?
Right. So depression is actually quite common, about 10 to 15% of deliveries, but it's a sadness. It's a lack of bond or connection with your baby crying. It's treatable and we can have those discussions, but postpartum psychosis is actually a medical emergency. Yes. This is when women are hallucinating, having delusions, thoughts of harming themselves and the baby, and that bandwidth to realize what reality is versus delusions is gone. And that's why it's dangerous.
And Dr. Berndorf, kind of more specifically, what are the warning signs from the outside, right? Because I think a lot of spouses are watching this thinking, you know, when is that moment where my gut is telling me something is wrong? But also, what does it feel like as a woman going through it?
Yeah. Well, I think that for those on the outside, you can't always see it. I think when someone's crying and telling you how horrible they feel and they're overwhelmed, like in a depression, you can see that and you can say, how can I help? But sometimes women are scared to share because they don't want to be deemed crazy, so to speak, right? And so they don't want to be thought of as having, like, what if I tell somebody if I'm having a thought that seems out of touch with reality, they're going to take my baby away. Something bad's going to happen to me. So there's a lot of fear around even speaking ill of being a mother, right? Society wants us to feel great about it, should be the best thing that ever happened. But in fact, it's an enormous challenge. It is both and. It is both wonderful and complicated and challenging. And that nuance is hard to hold, and it's hard to speak about.
I think this case has captivated everyone's attention. All of my friends are talking about it because they understand the difficulty. They know that they've had friends that go through this. And Dr. Phillips, you think this is actually going to get worse?
I do. I don't think that America is paying attention to what's happening in women's health. We are losing doctors in droves. The funding is not there to support maternal health. And this piece of mental health is being completely ignored. We have about 35 counties in the United States that have zero OBGYN or healthcare providers. These women's health deserts are going to set us up for failure in the near future if we don't start acting and talking about this really pivotal issue.
And it's not just that, these deserts and less medical students are going into OBGYN residencies because of some of the things that have happened since the Dobbs Supreme Court decision. But on top of that, the whole system is not built up to take care of women after they deliver a baby. Explain that, and how should we all be aware of that so we can help?
Well, education and training is way not happening. So doctors like us, it's hard to get the education and know about what this is, right? There are OBGYN deserts, and there are even less mental health services in areas across the country. We need more services, we need more education, we need screening, we need access to care, and we need treatment centers that are specialized in treating these illnesses.
Yeah, it's my understanding there's only 5 of these specific treatment centers for this in the country. But what about that? After you deliver a baby, you're constantly taking the baby back for those visits, but a mother's postpartum visit doesn't happen until what week?
6 weeks.
Oh, so 6 weeks after having a baby?
Too long.
This is a major flaw. This is a major flaw in our healthcare system. Really, mental health should be woven into your care before you have a baby, during your prenatal care, and especially afterwards. You described it as a hormonal tsunami. That's exactly what it is, and that's when you need the most support. So not only from friends, family checking in on you, we need our social services, we need our churches, we need our whole community to attend to the mother. Babies are cute. Someone's always looking after them, right? But no one is looking after the mother, and this is where we are right now.
Well, and to that point about the before part of it, because, you know, I'll be honest, my husband and I, we are at the beginning of this journey thinking about starting a family. But I also know that if you have experienced a depressive episode prior to getting pregnant, you are more likely to experience this. I have struggled with depression along with millions of American women. So what are the things that someone who has gone through this should be doing differently? You know, we talk about creating a birth plan. What about creating that mental health plan?
That's the best thing you can do, to talk to somebody, to get your services lined up. If you have a history of any kind of mental health issue, you should be getting ready for what could happen, because it can happen again. Particularly if it's happened before. Family history, personal history, stressful life events, these are risk factors for people having depression, anxiety, and other illnesses during and after pregnancy. Yeah. So you're so smart to talk about it, to get ready for it, to find out, do I need, what services? Do I need to be in therapy? Do I need to be on medications? Do I need to consider those things? What should I do to make sure that I'm in the best stead when I have this baby?
And I think it's so important for women and others to remember that this is completely normal and happens. Yes, there is no shame in this at all. And we've got to change the system to be so focused on women's health post-birth. What can be done to do that?
Listen, I'm always an advocate of voting, right? So voting in an interest that serves women's health is critical. I think we also really need to challenge these insurance companies. What good is having insurance if they don't cover your psychiatric therapy, if they don't cover your medications, if they don't cover your admissions? What use is it? And I think that we have to keep having these conversations to remove the stigma of mental health. We all have our issues. Mental health is the same as your heart health. So why do we separate it? Why don't we fund it? Why do we isolate it?
Dr. Camila Phillips, thank you so much. Oh my God.
I get that.
You are terrific. And I've so enjoyed our conversations here and off camera as well. Thank you for changing the conversation. Dr. Catherine Berndorf, thank you so much.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
And a reminder, you can catch Nora's special healthful podcast about postpartum psychosis on Friday. There's also a new episode out today featuring Trina Kira Stokes, who spoke about the importance of weight training.
The reason we need muscle and we need strength training is that you have to consider that an insurance policy for your wellness future.
Muscle and strength training is an insurance policy.
Yes. So muscle, not to be dramatic, but it's your organ of longevity. So muscle
is Healthful with Nora O'Donnell is available wherever you get your podcasts. And that is a very, very important thing. You got to strength train. I'm always watching her on Instagram.
And it's good for
She's
your,
amazing.
It's good for your mental health too.
Yes. Welcome back to CBS Mornings. Time for the stories that are the talk of the table. All right, Vlad, what are you going to follow up yesterday's with?
I got a little follow up to yesterday. You ready for a little follow up? Because, of course, yesterday was about the spicy states in America, the
most
friskiest, the most adventurous and friskiest states. Today, I have a ranking of the most romantic U.S. cities.
Are you trying to tell us something?
No, yet? I just love romance. A dating app analyzed the number of Google searches for love theme terms like romantic getaways or date night ideas in major cities. So, same thing as we did yesterday. Can you guess which city had the most heart? We're going to start at number five, but I want you to think about what number one could be. Number five, Jacksonville, Florida. Okay. Number four, Chicago.
I believe that.
Okay, yeah.
I fell in love with Chicago.
You fell in love in Chicago?
My husband lived in Chicago.
Oh, we'll see. There it is. Anecdotal evidence. All right, number three, Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay, I'll give him that.
This one was kind of a surpriser, but I'm sure I'm going to hear from people from this city. Number two, Nashville, Tennessee.
Slow dance into a country
song. I mean,
in a bar.
A man in a cowboy hat. I'm not mad at it.
A little urban cowboy action. All right. Number one, obviously the most romantic city in America, New York City, the Big Apple.
Oh,
what?
I think this was a setup.
It's not a setup. It had more than 212 romance-related searches per 100,000 residents. Look, Central Park is one of the most romantic locations anywhere, I think.
Yeah. On Sex and the City, the episode where Carrie and Big are in the carriage across Central Park.
Yes.
That's pretty
special. Yeah, that's TV. Yeah. That's not how someone's running by sweating. Like,
no,
it ain't that romantic.
Hey, get out of my way.
Such a wonderful, and the restaurants and just taking walks in New York City. But also, Central Park, I think it's just one of the most beautiful locations ever. It's a blessing to have it here in the city. So I could see how New York could be coming in at the top.
Okay, we'll give it to you.
All right. What you got, Michelle?
Okay, so my talk of the table is about nostalgia, right? It's this nostalgia trend that's now showing up in your cereal box. For the first time in a decade, you're going to find a toy inside boxes of Kellogg's Frosted Flakes, Fruit Loops, Apple Jacks, and Corn Pops. This is all tied to the movie Toy Story 5. Cereal makers are betting, though, that millennial and Gen X parents and just people in general are going to feel nostalgic for the days when they dug into the bottom of that cereal box as a kid to find a toy. I used to get in trouble because I would dump all the cereal.
Of course you did. Or you just stick your little grubby hand inside.
Touching everything. My mother's like, get your nasty hands out of that cereal box.
And you pull it out. I got the secret Dakota ring.
Right.
Yeah.
I cannot. Y'all, I'm really hyped about
That's very cool.
Real deal excited about getting the toy.
Should we all do Fruit Loops for breakfast tomorrow and then just go in there?
Well, since I'm not eating any lettuce or any cold cuts or anything, might as well add the carbs to the diet.
Listen, Fruit Loops are my jam. Corn Pops are my jam.
Can you get salmonella or probably give now, right, Listeria? It's safe.
I would risk it for the toy in the cereal box right now.
Risk it all.
Yes.
Hey, you got to get that ring.
That's right.
All right, my talk at the table is the happiest place on earth. It's getting a tab more expensive, and we have feelings.
Oh yes, guys,
no, I'm
thing.
I'm a Disney adult, all
right?
Yeah,
you are.
So Disney is rolling out another premium upcharge. This time it's at Tokyo Disneyland, where guests can pay about $22 for reserved viewing of its villain-themed Halloween parade. That's a 40% increase. Now, fans are frustrated because this is on top of what you're already paying for admission, though international is less expensive than the U.S. But it got me thinking. When did premium stop meaning extra and start meaning the best parts of the experience are behind a paywall? And by the way, it's not just Disney, right?
Yes.
Airlines charge for seats. Concerts have VIP sections.
That's
streaming
true.
Services charge to skip ads. So here's my question. Are companies just giving us more options, or are they slowly making the basic experience worse so we pay to get back
you
what was
said
the
it.
Ladder.
You said it
the
right
ladder.
There. You said it right there, Kelly.
That's
you
it.
Hit
That's the,
nail
the bottom
on the
line.
Head.
It used to be just standard.
Right.
It was standard that you had these things. And now they're making you feel as if they're giving you something extra and you got to pay for it. But in fact, it really just is the bare bones minimum of what would have existed 10 years ago.
Now, that being said, as the capitalist in me, this is just capitalism at work, because if people are willing to pay for it, why shouldn't Disney charge for it?
But the thing at Disney, is it just where you stand? Is that what they're...
Yeah, that's like the particular area, you know, you want the front row, that kind of thing.
Well, I don't ever go to the parade anyway. I'm too busy eating a corn dog and a funnel cake on the ride.
Girl, we need to go to Disney. I am a
Disney adult too.
You know, I think about you. When I wake up, when I go to bed, pretty much all the time.
Ooh, that is award-winning actor Aaron Pierre in The Morning Show, but now he is joining the DC Universe, starring as Green Lantern John Stewart in the new HBO Max series Lanterns. It follows Stewart as a trainee under Hal Jordan, Earth's first Green Lantern, so take a look.
Sorry, no one's allowed in.
Really? Seems like the whole town's in.
Oh, come on. That's enough, don't you think?
John Stewart, with Hal Jordan, we're partners.
Thought there was only one Green Lantern.
Well, technically I'm in training.
So like a sidekick.
Why don't you just make the call?
Hey, boss. There's another one.
What's that? He's so smooth. Won't you just make a call? Aaron Pierre is here with us now. Good morning.
Welcome. Good morning. Good morning. Good
You're
morning.
You're bringing a little joy to this studio
really
today.
Are.
I appreciate you. You're bringing joy to me. So it's a mutual transaction.
Yes, for sure. Okay, so we've got so much to talk to you about now. You said, though, recently, I think I heard you say, if you had a choice of anybody you wanted to play in the DC universe, it would be John Stewart.
Absolutely.
Yes? So why is this character so special to you?
I mean, I think this character is so celebrated and championed and beloved internationally. Mm-hmm. But speaking specifically about why I would choose John, I think, you know, the list for that is not exhaustive. But I would say the first things that come to mind is I love how his complexity is detailed. I love how he has arguably seemingly juxtaposed things coexisting in one individual. To me, that is something that is very tangible and relatable in a tangible way as humans.
Yeah.
You know, we are all complex. We're not just one thing. We're not one dimensional. And also another thing I love so much about John is that unlike many of his contemporaries, he wasn't born with superpowers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's fundamentally he has heart, and that has what has led him to the point that he is today as the superhero and the, you know, the protector of Sector 2814. He was born fearless, and also he made a choice to continue to be fearless.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that I love about the Green Lantern Corps. You know, I think it's relatable. It's relatable.
For sure.
You know, and that's why I love it. I feel like the Green Lantern Corps is just full of rock stars, and it's an honor and a privilege to be part of that unit.
I love hearing you speak about that relatability, because I think, as you know, we're all kids growing up, like we're all three superhero nerds, yes. But like, I'm not going to get superpowers. But that relatability, I think, is what makes this character so special. Something that I don't find relatable. Mm. You had a serious injury. You had surgery before, when you were going through the audition process. I probably would have been like, all right, it's not my time.
Tap now.
But you decided to go for it.
Absolutely. What would John do? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's really not hyperbole. That is really a thing that I thought, you know. I had this injury, you know, sorry to the viewers who might find this uncomfortable, but it was my tendon separated from the bone entirely.
Wow.
And my bicep retracted to my shoulder. I won't give any more details on it. But you know, I was in a position where I could either go into the screen test, where it was, I think it was the final two or three, whatever it was, or not.
Yeah.
And for me, there was never a question. There was never an alternative to going in and giving my best. You know, John, he gets the job done, and I wanted to emulate that in some way in my approach to the character. So that's what I did, and you know, thank God we're here today.
We are here today. James Gunn said when he first announced that you were going to be Green Lantern that he's always wanted to work with you. He was going to cast you in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's right.
He wanted you to play Adam Warlock. Now you get to play Green Lantern, your dream character, and you're going to be in the Superman sequel, Man of Tomorrow. What's it like to be part? I know the Green Lantern Corps, that's a big deal, but also this universe of DC heroes.
Oh, it's an immense joy and an immense privilege. I think, you know, it's a dream realized, you know, and I think I speak about gratitude a lot, but it's because for me that is such a core value and characteristic. I think it's so critical to be fundamentally grateful. I think it presents itself in, if not all, the vast majority of your actions day to day. And just, you know, to be John Stewart, to be part of the Green Lantern Corps, the DC Cinematic Universe, it's just amazing.
But you're also going to be in the Star Wars universe. You're going to be Starfighter.
Yes.
I mean, right?
He's living in abundance, right?
What?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, man.
The blessings are plenty.
I'm grateful. No, it's. I mean, we had a blast filming that. We had such a blast. Sean Levy is just golden.
He's amazing. Yep.
Ryan Gosling, golden. Mm-hmm. And the world that they create for the actors on set is unlike anything you will have experienced. You know, like
you are what we've not experienced before. We're so happy to see you as John Stewart. I, as somebody who's been reading Green Lantern comics my whole life, in brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light. Aaron Pierre, thank you. Lantern's debuts next Sunday.
Bye tomorrow.
And we do thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow in your feed and Monday through Friday on your local CBS stations starting at 7 a.m.
Paramount Podcasts.